Jury is called to order. It is 2:50. Present for the record are Representatives Guerra, Coghill, Wilson, Gruenberg, Cott, Anderson, and myself, McGuire. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We have one item that we're going to take up on the agenda today, which is the matter of Senate Bill number 3005. And we have the representative for the bill's sponsor, Jason, and we also have on the line Lauren Wickersham. So I'm going to go ahead Rice. And tell us about, pardon me, Lauren Wickersham Rice and Michael. If you want to go ahead and tell us about the bill.
Yes, ma'am. Michael Malone, staff for Senator Bundy. I apologize, Senator couldn't be here, but he had an optometry appointment in Anchorage. And I, too, would like to apologize to the committee. I'm going to have to leave at 5 o'clock to also catch a flight back to Anchorage.
Me too.
Is it an ear exam or?
I won't go where else.
Before I begin, I'd like to state that this is essentially the same bill that was before this body during the end of last session, but failed to get an opportunity for concurrence. This bill really balances the need to protect individual freedom with the ability to prosecute crime effectively and provide defendants with witnesses on their behalf. These witnesses are crucial to both the defense and prosecution. Unfortunately, material witnesses often refuse to cooperate with law enforcement officials, and that significantly impedes the ability to bring indictments or prosecute crimes. Senate Bill 3005 protects material witnesses from unreasonable arrests or confinement and helps ensure the availability of crucial testimony. This bill has had a couple minor changes since it was last before this body. The first change limits the scope of Senate Bill 3005. We limit property crimes that will be applicable to only the most serious arson cases. We also limit the scope of felony crimes against a person to ensure that victims of domestic violence are not charged with a misdemeanor if they refuse photographs. In current common law, officers are allowed to gather evidence at the scene of any crime, including taking photographs. This new subsection clarifies that we are not attempting to overrule any power given to peace officers by the court system. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. We all know what the bill does. We have a House version that mirrors this roughly, and there's some work done in the committee, but we have some Gruenberg amendments.
Inquire for a minute. Please.
Yeah, Representative Gruenberg.
Mike, is that your name?
Representative.
Okay. I studied at some length the judiciary CS. Could you kindly go over the difference between the judiciary CS and the judiciary amended?
Actually, on technicalities, I'm going to defer to Mr. Ganelli.
Okay. Aren't you retired, you poor thing? We just keep bringing you back, huh?
Thank you. For the record, Dean Ganelli, former Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law, and now Private Citizen Ganelli, appearing pro bono. To respond to Representative Gruenberg's questions about the difference between the Senate Judiciary version and the version that passed the Senate, the amendment made on the floor of the Senate yesterday was to further restrict the crimes for which persons could be detained. The first restriction is it would be for felonies only.
Do you have a copy of the?
I don't have a copy. I'm just.
Lauren, if we could get copies of the two bills. I saw, just for your information, I saw one change, which is on page 2, on lines 14 through 17. It used to say a felony property crime under 1146. Now it limits it to arson in the first or second degree and criminal mischief, which is in the first or second degree. Is there any change other than that?
It used to also say, I think it was any crime under against a person under AS 1141, and now it's just a felony crime.
Oh, I see.
So that removes misdemeanors.
Well, I would like to inquire, Madam Chair, wherever you are, Vice Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. Okay, I'd like to go over the last thing. If the members, do you all have both versions or just the one? You have both. Okay, if you take a look at the judiciary CS on page 2, line 15, and then on page 2, line 15, where they inserted the word felony crime, which would eliminate certain assaults. And I wondered why you only limit it to felonies, because at a beginning, let's say there is a gang melee. You find that somebody has slugged somebody else, and you don't know at that point in time whether the person has suffered or is going to suffer a severe injury because they're lying on the ground. You may at that time only know that there's been a simple assault. It could subsequently, if the injury develops, turn into a felonious. And that's why I liked it when it didn't limit it to felonies. And I'm wondering, you and I hadn't talked about this because I wasn't aware of that amendment. I would be prepared to delete the word felony there. I don't have any problem with the rest. But that concerned me because in one of these gang things, you may just see somebody on the ground, and at that moment, you don't know what exact crime has been, except you know there's been an assault.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that specific change was made at the request of Senator French in the Senate. It was then incorporated into an amendment that Senator Bundy introduced. And the Senator French went into great detail in Senate Judiciary in explaining why he felt that was appropriate. And I think trying to characterize what he said is that many of these witnesses will also be victims. They will also be a victim of domestic violence. And he did not want to. He thought that some victims of domestic violence, they don't want to be involved, they don't want their picture taken, etc. And he says, are we really going to create a situation where a victim of domestic violence is subject to arrest if she doesn't allow her picture to be taken? And he and I had a very spirited debate over that question, but I think his feeling was that the police ought to be able to have the authority to take protective measures to check on the welfare of victims and stop them temporarily to check on them, but not to subject them to photographs and the other things and criminal penalties. That was his rationale.
Well, I don't have a problem with that through the chair, but this is the crime that's witnessed, not who the witness is. I believe you should protect the witness herself, but here they're talking about what is the crime that they're witnessing. And that is what I'm concerned about, because you got a big group of people standing around, somebody lying on the ground. You don't know if there's a serious enough injury at that time to necessarily, at that moment when you're questioning people, say it's definitely a felony. And that's what I'm concerned about. If you only allow the thing if it's a felonious crime, at that these cops have got to act very quickly to talk to these people, and that's the only concern I have there.
Just to his point, I think what they're trying to do is it's not just witnesses at or near or somewhere around the crime, and so that leaves that open for that discussion, and I think that's probably, I only heard all, part of the conversation.
I think it's the opposite. The thing we're talking, if you take a look with what that phrase refers to, is the crime that has been committed, not against the witness in the past, but against the current victim who's lying on the ground.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I mean, what you say, certainly makes sense. The kinds of situations that Chief Monaghan and the Anchorage Police Department has relayed to previous committees were situations involving shootings and those kinds of things. I think most of the kinds of situations you're talking about, kind of the gangs getting together and fighting or something like that, most of them are going to involve a weapon of some sort, even a club or a knife or something. And out of that, you're going to get felony-level conduct. Mm-hmm. Even if you put somebody in fear of serious injury using a weapon, that's a felony. I think it's going to be a rare instance when you would have no weapons involved and only an ostensible misdemeanor, which may later develop into a felony. I think that would be a rare circumstance. But I see your point. I certainly, as I said, I certainly discussed this at great length with Senator French, and he ultimately prevailed. I think one of his other points was, what we are doing by this legislation is we are allowing the police to detain and photograph, and in some cases fingerprint, completely innocent citizens. We only ought to do that in the most serious circumstances, and frankly, having that happen only in felony level crimes, I think that is going to give some comfort to a court that might review the a challenge to this. So, I felt that under all those circumstances, my recommendation to Senator Bundy was this is not a terribly harmful amendment that was being proposed.
Maybe, Madam Chair. Is Chief Monaghan going to be on the line?
Is anyone on the line?
Lauren Rice.
It's just Lauren.
Lauren.
Well, I'm not going to propose that, but maybe at some point, if the chief has a problem with it, we can revisit it. Because I know this is aimed at these serious gang things, but you could also have a circumstance where this case, this statute could be used in a barroom brawl where you're in a fairly enclosed circumstance and there are just guys, or maybe some women too, who are brawling and they're just trying to sort things out. Anyway, I'm not going to belabor the point, and as long as the administration and the law enforcement community is okay with that, that's okay with me.
Other questions?
Madam Chair, I have two amendments I hope will maybe satisfy my concerns about witness safety and one other topic.
Okay. Do you want to have so Shalon's copying them?
Let me go through it. Representative Grimberg, are you done with your...
I'm going to offer amendments at some point here, but that answered my question to Mr. Guanelli. And I assume you're representing the administration in this.
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Mr. Grinnelli, I have two concerns about this bill. I think they can both be resolved. One is I don't want to endanger a witness to, let's say, a gang murder who might not want to give their address out. And there are substantial protections in the law right now, but not perfect protections. So I want to make sure that somebody who fears retribution by giving their address out is protected. Because it's a real issue with gang murders. It's a real issue with gang crimes. Those gangs are prevalent in the neighborhood. They threaten and scare people, and we just want to make sure that people who have seen a crime know that they're not going to endanger themselves by cooperating. So I'm having an amendment copied that will deal with that, I hope. The other is... there's one too many ors in this bill. If you look at page 2, I think it's appropriate to make somebody who's a witness to a crime help. I think that's an appropriate thing. I think it's appropriate to say if you were at the scene of a crime, that's good enough. You should help. But if you weren't at the scene, the bill right now says if you didn't witness it, if we can't show that you witnessed it and we can't show that you were at the scene of the crime, we can also charge you with a crime of non-cooperation if you were, quote, near the scene. And I think that's a little bit too fuzzy. I'm worried that will give police, in some circumstances, the right to do neighborhood sweeps of innocent people who were not witnesses or couldn't have been witnesses. So I tried to just delete that language the last time the bill came through. That didn't work. And I've got a halfway compromise to deal with that. And I just want to define the term near to say near is not a house a block away where you couldn't have seen or heard the crime. We don't want you to do neighborhood sweeps of innocent people. But if you were within a place where you could have seen the crime, could have heard something from the crime, then that is fine. So we'll redefine near to be within a distance where you actually could have observed something, but no further than that. The police won't be required to deal with that with precision because it says they just have to have reasonable suspicion that the person was close enough, a reasonable suspicion that they could have heard, could have seen. So those are the two concerns. This is lawyer's language, but the way it's written right now, if you witnessed or if you are at the scene, we can require you to provide information and arrest you if you don't. But if you were not at the scene, if you did not witness, we can still do that to you if you were near. And near is just, I think that pushes it too far. So I'll deal with that under the language of the amendments once we get to that point. But with those two clarifications, so we're really only going after what the sort of media sound bites have addressed, which is people who are witnesses who are not cooperating. As long as we're dealing with that problem, I'm fine with it.
May I have a parliamentary inquiry?
Representative Gruenberg.
Representative Guerra, through the chair, I can read your second amendment, but the first one, I don't know where it goes or what it does.
Ah, that's a fair point. So
you want to complete
it? Can I ask what a parliamentary inquiry is? In all these years, I've had no idea. What is that?
A question.
Yeah, just a question.
Just asking you, Les, what's going on with amendment number one?
Okay, yeah, I can do that if somebody can get me a tissue.
Either way, Madam Chair,
we'll get to your amendments.
When you're taking amendments, I'll yield to Representative Guerra for his amendments. And just for the record, I had some of the same concerns as Guerra, number two, on this, and Mr. Bonelli talked, and that's why I liked it. But I don't understand Guerra, number one.
Oh, I see what happened. I handed out the wrong piece of paper.
Okay. Can we
Why don't we do this?
We'll do the other one.
Les, do you want to... okay, so let's take... What's the one that we can read here?
At page 2, line 14.
Okay. Does everyone understand that amendment? We'll call this amendment number 1.
That's 2, number 14?
Yep.
Okay.
Page 2, line 14. Okay. Mr. Ganelli, do you want to... I know some of this stuff has been discussed. You could remind the committee...
Madam Chair...
Representative Gruenberg.
Just for the record... I had a similar concern, and I'm just putting on the record what we talked about, and I had initially prepared an amendment that said, instead of near the scene, in the immediate vicinity. Something. I mean, I'm not sure it was great, but it was the, okay, he's shaking his head. Anyway, so I had the same question.
Dean asked his friends, do you think I really should have retired? And they said, why don't you go to a judiciary committee and you'll remind yourself why you did.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we have to maybe go back a step slightly and recall where this whole idea comes from. And this idea of detaining people who are who may have witnessed or been near the scene of the commission of a crime comes from a model code of pre-arraignment procedure by the American Law Institute. It's a well-respected group of scholars who get together and propose modern laws. And in fact, the American Law Institute model penal code is what Alaska adopted as its criminal code about 20 years ago. And as well as many other states. So this formulation of near comes from, I believe, the Model Code of Pre-Arraignment Procedure. And it has been approved by Professor Lefebvre, who has a law school hornbook on search and seizure. Probably all the lawyers here have used Professor Lefebvre's book in one way or another. It is something that has been cited time and time again by the Alaska Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court in terms of search and seizure law, and the formulation of near is what Professor Lefebvre discusses when he discusses this particular provision. This is not something that legal scholars view as particularly threatening. I think that the other provisions that the police have to go through they have to have reasonable suspicion that the person, you know, may have material and may have information in material aid of the investigation. I mean, if Representative Guerra really believes that the police are going to be, you know, doing neighborhood sweeps, then I think that near isn't enough. We've got to put more parameters on all of the provisions. But if you really believe that the police are only going to, you know, stop people if they believe they have material information, you've got to expect that they're going to do that only when they think the person, you know, is in a position to have gotten that information. The problem is that when you start talking about within viewing or listening distance of the crime, you take away the authority of the police to you know, stop a person who may have seen a speeding car leaving the scene, may have been a block away, but saw the getaway car. Didn't see the commission of the crime, but heard the, you know, the screeching of wheels and the car leaving the scene. I think that we've got to. I mean, my recommendation is to, you know, to go with what the legal scholars have provided, and not put, you know, undue limitations on the police and them saying, okay, well, let's see, could that person have, you know, is that, you know, what's that person's hearing like? Could they have heard it? Could they have seen? The police are, Representative Greenberg is right. These are fast-moving situations. They are not going to, if they've got a real serious crime to deal with, and all of these are very serious crimes. I mean, they're, you know, they're felony-level assaults. They're arsons. They're felony criminal mischief, which is blowing up pipelines and terrorist type activities, drive-by shootings. They don't have time to deal with people who, you know, might not have heard something, might not have seen something. They're going to deal with the people that are most likely to give them material aid in the investigation. But I think that putting too many limitations on them, I think, runs the risk that that they aren't going to be able to do their jobs. So that's the answer to the...
Chief Monaghan is on the line now. Chief, Representative Guerra?
Let me just on the Lefebvre thing that it's in his book, are you saying that he recommends that states adopt statutes that allow you to arrest non-cooperative witnesses? Because you said that in those statutes the term near is used, and you implied that that Professor Lefebvre supports these things.
Through the chair, Professor Lefebvre's book discusses these, you know, this formulation of it. Now, you know, I haven't read it. It's cited in an Alaska Supreme Court case and that's what I've read, that Professor Lefebvre discussed the Model Code of Pre-Arraignment Procedure. You know, I'd have to go back to his horn book and find out whether he's, you know, saying that it ought to be near as opposed to something else. Yeah. The bottom line is that legal scholars have come up with this formulation, and I don't want to run the risk that we're going to unduly tie the hands of the police.
I'm just trying to understand.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. So, and the model code, does the model code propose a provision that says you should be able to arrest people who may have been a witness to a crime, or are you talking about some other provision in the model code that uses the term near?
The model code provision is the first provision in this bill. It talks about, in fact, the model code provision talks about for any person crime or property crime, if the person is at or near the scene of the crime, they have material, police believe they have material aid in the investigation, police can detain them to obtain an account of the crime or for identification purposes. I mean, that is what's in the model penal or the model code of pre-arraignment procedure. It's that part of it. It's not the next step, which is, you know, the Alaska formulation of it, which says that in certain very serious crimes, you can take fingerprints, you can serve subpoenas. Those are separate to deal with the situation we have in Alaska.
Senator Kira, and then I'll go to Chief Monaghan.
Yeah. I understand your concern that we should come up with terms that the police can use as opposed to terms that are going to be hard for them to interpret. And you understand the problem we're trying to protect against. you don't want a statute that's so broad that it allows you to arrest the people we want to arrest, but also allows you to arrest a bunch of people we don't intend to cover. And you don't want to make it so narrow that it doesn't let you get to the witnesses you want to cover. We're trying to achieve as close as possible a line to where we're trying to get. But just as you criticize the terms I come up with, and we can work on that, what kind of guidance are you giving to police where you say even if the person didn't witness the crime, even if they weren't at the scene, you can also arrest them if they were near? How are the cops going to, how are the police going to interpret near? What's the standard for that? One block, two blocks, three?
Madam Chair, through the chair, you know, I cannot sit here and tell the committee what the Attorney General's office is going to advise police agencies to do in fast-moving situations. We don't advise the police how to, I mean, the police have a wide range of discretion in drunk driving situations, for example. They pull people over when they have reasonable grounds to believe that they may be intoxicated. And, you know, does that mean that when they hit the fog line once and swerve back in the middle of the lane or twice? I mean, we're not in a position to dictate precisely to them how they do their jobs in every possible factual scenario. These kinds of cases are going to arise in most likely in urban areas. They may be in urban residential areas. They may be in urban downtown areas. They may be in mall situations. The kinds of structures that are involved, what may be blocking somebody's view, what may be blocking somebody's hearing, I mean, all of these are circumstances that I cannot at this point in time predict. I'm not in a position to say, you know, I mean, on a piece of legislation that hasn't even passed yet, how precisely the police are going to do this, other than the way they do everything else that we ask that they do, and that's with judgment and discretion, and ultimately, you know, under review of the courts if it's challenged. So, you know, I don't know if I can answer it any better.
Certainly, the A section of this says that the officer must have reasonable suspicion. And so could it be interpreted that under reasonable suspicion that was a person that was at or near the scene of a crime, that if it was near the scene of the crime that was totally unrelated to the ability to see it, that any reasonable officer would detain somebody? And so I think not. And isn't there protections for people when they are detained and there is no reasonable nexus to this crime scene? I think that's what we're trying to get at here. The at or near the scene seems to me under any reasonable suspicion that they were witnessed or were at or near the scene would mean that it would have to be somehow at least fill part of what this amendment would do, but if there was other things that they might have seen, for example, if there was an explosion and they saw pieces of things coming down, they didn't maybe see the crime, but they were near the scene of an explosion and saw something. So I tend to say at or near because there's too many other things that are going to be the what ifs. If you just limit it to just two things, then I think you're going to run into some problems. So if a police is not reasonably sure, or there's a suspicion that a person was in that vicinity, what protection then would somebody have to say you can't detain me?
Did you want to respond?
Well, it sound like that was a direct question. And so the question is what remedy does somebody have? You know, ultimately, what this bill does is it allows the police to stop the person and to ask them who they are. Doesn't require that they say anything, but just who they are. Most people are gonna want to cooperate with the police. It's gonna be those few who don't, and then the police just want to find out, okay, who are you? Tell me who you are. You know, maybe in a couple days I'll come back and talk to you when things have calmed down. So, you know, what they're required to do at that point is show some ID. And if, you know, if they don't have ID, then they may get a subpoena and say, okay, you know, we think you know something about this serious offense. You know, here's a subpoena for the grand jury. Grand jury's meeting, you know, in 3 days. You know, you can testify then. Ultimately, they would be able to challenge that police action. I mean, if they refuse to cooperate, refuse to have their photo taken, refuse to do any of that, they could be charged with a crime that they could challenge. I suspect most people are simply going to show their ID at some point. They may get a subpoena to testify in front of the grand jury. If they at that point, if they have some legal privilege not to testify, if for example they say their testimony would incriminate them and they've got a Fifth Amendment privilege, they could challenge that in court. But ultimately, citizens, you know, in our country have an obligation to, if they are subpoenaed to a grand jury, to testify. It's a confidential proceeding. Unless charges are brought, you know, their name doesn't get out. But ultimately, there is that obligation. So, if there are wrongful charges, they can challenge it on that. If they have a privilege not to testify in front of the grand jury, they can challenge it on that basis. But ultimately, the police need to know, you know, who they are. And that's all this does. In other words, it basically allows the police to find out who these people are so that they can talk to them sometime later.
Well, it seems to me that if we leave it the way it is, it gives the police a reason to get the name. But if we put in viewing or listening, they'll say, oh, I didn't see anything and I didn't hear anything, and then you can't get the name. So it seems to me that what we want to accomplish will be actually the opposite with this amendment.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, it sort of creates a built-in excuse. Well, I didn't hear anything. I didn't see anything. You can't even talk to me. And I think the police ought to have the authority to say, well, you know, you're telling me you didn't see anything, but you know, I believe you did. Let me at least know who you are. I don't need to talk to you now. I can, you know, we can talk some later time.
Chief Monaghan, I wanted to. Representative Gruenberg had asked for if you were on the line earlier, and I know you are now. Do you like to comment on the discussion that's going forward and weigh in on the bill?
Thank you. I would. For the record, my name is Walt Monaghan. I'm the Anchorage Police Chief. And in regards to what I've been listening to, I understand that there's an amendment requesting that there be a viewing or listening requirement. But in many cases, like I think I've testified earlier, individuals who may be witnessed may not know that they're witnesses. For example, what if it was a situation that as we pull into the area that I'm interested in finding out who is leaving the area? So I stopped someone, did you see anybody driving out of here very quickly? And, oh yes, it was an SUV or whatever the situation was that would have, may not have direct connection with the crime itself. And just to have that ability so I can eventually answer a defense question and how did you know to come to find my client's vehicle, I have answers for. But in the some of the earlier requests or the questions I heard in there about the arresting witnesses, the questions about dependent on whatnot, understand that we don't get a call the moment something usually happens. It's usually, it could be several minutes before someone has access to a phone if they don't call on a cell immediately. And then it depends on our response and arrival time. So it may be a couple of blocks running time to get out of the area before we're even alerted to it. So it's a very fluid thing in regards to our ability to get into an area immediately and try to apprehend everybody that we think is involved. The next one was
that's okay. No problem.
I think the viewing listening, I've already made a comment on that.
Representative Guerra.
Thanks. Well, this is Les Guerra. I'm trying to craft a compromise that works with people. Just so we don't go down this rabbit trail, under this statute, you don't have to prove that the person actually witnessed the crime or actually heard the crime in order to stop them. What you have to show is that the officer had reasonable suspicion that the person could have seen the crime. So it's not a defense to being fingerprinted to say, look, I was right there, but I didn't see anything. What the person says when they say, I didn't see anything or I didn't hear anything, that's irrelevant under the statute. The standard is, did the officer have reasonable suspicion? So are you close enough that a officer could have had reasonable suspicion that you were a witness? So I know you don't have the, you're not reading the bill maybe as closely as we are, but that's just not a danger under this bill. I understand the concern people are saying. I don't think we can define what near is. So let me offer a different way to do this. I don't want to limit the police to some sort of mathematical precision as to what near is, but we know what it's not. So why don't we do this? Why don't we say it's okay to leave in the term near, but let's say what's not okay. And I think we could say, if the officer has reasonable suspicion that the person witnessed, that's okay, that's in the bill. If the officer has reasonable suspicion that the person was at the scene, that's okay. And then if the officer has reasonable suspicion that the person was near the scene, that's okay if we limit it. And by the way, the bill's language doesn't help you get a witness who saw somebody flee, right? I mean, the person's 10 blocks away, the car is fleeing. Even under this bill, you're not near anymore, so you can't interview that witness anyway. So the criticism that the amendment takes away that ability, the bill takes away that ability, so you might want to deal with the fleeing suspect somehow. Let's just say it's okay if you witnessed, if the officer has reasonable suspicion you were at the scene, if the officer has reasonable suspicion that you were near, and then we'll have a separate section that says the term near shall not be interpreted to mean a location from which the person could not have heard or seen evidence of the crime. So if you couldn't have seen it, you couldn't have heard it, we're not going to go a block away behind a wall where you have a house, even though that's physically near the scene of the crime, because we know that you couldn't have seen it or you couldn't have heard it. We're just going to limit near that way. So you have the near standard in here, that's fine. But you say, look, if you couldn't have seen it and you couldn't have heard it, you're not the kind of person we're going to arrest. And that would provide probably enough protection to draw a fair enough dividing line between those people you want to arrest for not cooperating and those people you don't want to arrest for not cooperating. Remember, this bill is giving you the power to arrest a citizen who didn't do anything wrong and possibly who didn't witness anything. So let's really protect the people who didn't witness anything.
Okay, I understand what you're saying, and I think it is trying to keep that reasonable suspicion standard is the right standard for the use of the officers when they're out in the field. And I agree with you, Les, in regards to normally when we arrive at a scene, once we stabilize and kind of get an idea of what transpired, by procedure, we normally do what we call a canvas, a neighborhood canvas. I'd be knocking on your door and say, there was an incident that happened just down the street here. Did you see or hear anything? And that would resolve, if the guy says yes or no, we have to take a lot of that at face value. If the guy was standing out on the street, just right at the scene, or a witness that man over there was standing there next to that car when the shots rang out from that car, now that, I would say, if I have reasonable suspicion to talk to the man that was standing next to the car, and if he tells me something that, no, I didn't see or hear anything, then I still think we're covered on that. Did that make sense to you, Les?
I can't tell whether you're okay with the language that I came up with, which near is okay, so if the officer has reasonable suspicion that you were near, that's good enough, but near does not mean a location from which the person could not have heard or seen evidence of the crime. Is Is that okay? Can we carve that out?
Okay. The only other thing I need everybody would to think about is that you're my witness that you saw the crime. And in the time it took me to respond and arrive, you then have fled to your house and you went inside and you're two blocks away. And I somehow I get directed to you because I said, oh yeah, it was Les and he lives two houses down or two blocks away in a greenhouse over there. I know him, he's part of the neighborhood. And then I knock on your door and I say, Les, I know that you're two blocks away, but did you see or hear anything?
Yeah.
And nobody really knows the rest of your name. I don't know your name. Does that make sense to you?
It also gets the fleeing person. So maybe at the time the crime occurred.
Yeah, you want the person to have been near at the time of the crime, even though they ran 20 blocks away later on and you weren't able to catch them until 20 blocks away.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, that gets you.
We could do that.
Okay.
Carkill?
The language that we sent out of here was during the commission of a crime, which has been taken out of line 14.
Right.
So we might want to add that in rather because it witnessed or was at or near the scene during the commission of the crime. So that's what we passed out last time.
Yeah.
And Madam Chair, just to, as a point, I'm going to ask that we probably gauge our committee for about quarter till so that we can go back to the floor. And there's five other amendments. And so what do you think we should do as far as how we...
Madam Chair, it would help me.
Let's keep...
I'm going to have to repaginate to the amended version. Maybe we could take a break after Gara number two before we take mine.
That's fine.
And I want to talk to Dean about one of the amendments.
Why don't we just keep working, Representative Coghill, until we can't? And then we can go ahead and take a break. Let's try to get this ironed out because I think the concern that we had before by narrowing it to what we passed out, you are excluding people who may have fled or may be around that might have information that could help lead to solving the crime. So I don't think we want to go back to what we had before, but I do think that Les has highlighted a problem, which is that you also don't want to allow for sort of the neighborhood sweeps of everybody without cause. So I think the notion of within viewing or listening distance at the time the crime occurred really gets you there. And of course, you know, as Chief Monaghan knows, that's part of the training that you go through with your police officers, that it's an incredible power that you have and that it's an incredible obligation that you have taken on to, you know, to ensure the safety of our communities, and with it comes the responsibility of using that power in the right way. And that's what we just have to hope they do.
I understand that, and it is a balance, and we respect that. But since I have to be with everybody else who's mentioned it so far, is that there's certainly enough oversight and the ability to be prepared to challenge anything that we would take in response to this, that I'm comfortable with that as well.
Okay, so Representative Gehr, amendment to the amendment?
Madam Chair, I'll write this out so that before we finish this up.
Okay.
But I think what I'd like to do, Chief, is say near doesn't include if you're so far away that you couldn't have seen it or heard it. And then I'll put in a sentence that says, a person who was near the scene of the crime is subject to the section even if she or he left the area before the peace officer detains the person. And so that deals with your problem where you didn't catch the person until 10 blocks away. Is that okay?
That would work for me.
Okay.
So you're going to keep working on that. Do you want to, Max, are any of your amendments easy?
Yes, they are.
So let's
but give Shalon, can we take an at ease for a minute? She is duplicating him now because I had to repaginate.
Okay, that's fine. That's just a technical amendment.
I don't even have my copies.
Okay.
Matt, she's making them. Give her 10 seconds and she'll get them.
Okay, Representative Cott.
Madam Chair, just getting back to Les's amendment, I want to make sure that we don't exclude, say, someone who, just as an example, is on Fifth Avenue, 12:30 at night, window shopping, and there's a crime that's committed in the alleyway behind, you know, wasn't there, didn't hear anything, but they're potentially was a car sped away and went by him, squealing his tires, ran the light, and he continues to walk down, say, toward the Captain Cook. You know, it was two blocks away now from, let's say, that happened by the Egan Center. I want to make sure that that person still could be stopped and detained under the provisions of the bill, because, I mean,
so sort of in the course of fleeing the crime,
yeah,
scene.
Madam Chair, that
Representative Guerra?
I agree with Representative Cott, but what you're pointing to is really a flaw with the bill, not my amendment, because the bill only gets you near the scene of the crime, and what you're talking about, and we're all talking about, is not just near the scene of the crime, but also if you're not near, but it's in the right in the aftermath, right, the fleeing part. You're now nine blocks away.
So yeah, whether it's two blocks, maybe, you know, I'm only a half a block. I'm only, you know, 100 feet from the crime as just a bystander looking window shopping, but the crime was behind that set of buildings, you know, in an alleyway. And I'm just saying that if I'm walking window shopping, I may only be two blocks away by the time the police arrive and they see me walking. Maybe I'm a suspect. I don't, you know.
We should have a...
Dean, isn't the phraseology in the course and furtherance of the crime, at the crime or in the course and furtherance of the crime, isn't that the...
Well, or fleeing from the crime. I mean, we could do something with that. But I don't believe there's a flaw in the bill right now with respect to, you know, to people who flee. We're going to give the police this authority to stop you if you're near the scene of the crime. If you're a mile away and you see a car speeding by, the police don't have the authority to stop you. I mean, that's the way this bill was structured in the beginning, and I don't know that anybody is going to want to give the police broad authority to stop people who are a mile away from the crime. The problem with it is, what this bill also allows is, if there's a rape in a house or a child abuse in a house and nobody can see it and nobody can hear it, but a neighbor sees somebody, you know, leaving the house in the middle of the night, or Representative Cott's situation where somebody's 100 feet away and they didn't hear the bank robbery, they didn't see the bank robbery, but all of a sudden they, you know, they see the person running out. I mean, those are the kind of real situations we've got to deal with, and I think we're just, this is an important piece of legislation and you know, for important purposes, and I hate for it to get bogged down on what I'm not certain are realistic fears about, you know, police abuses of something that, you know, that we haven't even tried yet. So,
if I can toss in, I got my hand raised, but I don't know if you can see me.
Come on again. We're calling on you.
Okay, thank you. It's officers are highly motivated to those kind of cases that involve violent crimes. I mean, if there's a shooting, a stabbing, a rape, that. You won't see the officers responding en route to those things, stop and do a traffic stop, or they won't do anything else. There's a higher priority. And when we come up to a situation and we're asking somebody, did you see anything? Was any car just whip on by? Most of the time, the people say yes or no. And if they say yes, then they kind of look like good information. They need to jot down that name from that person so that they can add. But by and large, that's not going to happen until we get somebody at the scene first to start coordinating the search for any evidence that may have moved away from the scene. So, you know, just going out there and haphazardly looking for small infractions when we have a bigger fish to fry, so to speak, it isn't something that police normally do. And I understand the context and the concerns, and I appreciate every one of them. But again, for realistic discussion purposes, these officers are going to be motivated towards the crime that they have been dispatched to, not whether somebody is going to say, I don't know anything, so sue me, kind of thing, unless we feel we have that reasonable suspicion that they're involved.
Okay, so Representative Guerra's got an amendment being worked on here. Representative Gruenberg, you've got amendments repaginated. Okay, which would you like to start with? So we're going to set amendment number one to the side. Yep. Susan? Okay, and so amendment number two?
Hopefully the three that I'm going to offer right now are very quick.
Okay.
The first one we'll label number two, and that's change is to may be.
Yeah.
And if the members would look, the language currently says the officer or the subpoena must advise the person that failure to honor the subpoena is punishable, and the technical term should be may be punishable because the contempt charge must be tried and then proven and the punishment must be given by the court. And I've worked on this with Mr. Guanelli, and as I understand, the administration and the sponsor have no problem with that, and I'd ask unanimous consent.
Is there an objection to amendment number 2? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 2 carries. Amendment number 3, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next one is after subpoena, insert, or the lead investigator. And this goes where it says that if you don't have your identification, if you don't have your identification, you have to provide the peace officer who served the subpoena with a copy of it before the grand jury if you wish to get it withdrawn. And it may be difficult or impossible to locate that particular peace officer. In Anchorage, many of our police members live in Eagle River or live farther out in Wasilla and in the Mat-Su. And so what Mr. Guanelli and I have agreed is that you could provide that to the peace officer or the lead investigator in the case. Just makes it a little easier to deal with this problem. And as I understand it, the administration and the sponsor have no problem with this amendment.
Yes.
Is there an objection to amendment number 3? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 3 has carried. Amendment number 4, Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is the other amendment that is to the provisions that state that you must show valid government-issued photographic identification. Not everybody has that, and so what we're saying is that or other valid identification that the officer finds to be reliable to identify the person, and this language was drafted by Mr. Guanelli to solve the problem, and as I understand it, we'll do that, and it's agreeable with the administration, and I understand the sponsor as well. And I'd offer the amendment number 4.
Okay, is there an objection to amendment number 4? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 4 carries.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to delay the other amendment until after the break, because I want to talk to Mr. Guanelli and the sponsor a little bit. Is that okay?
Okay, let me take a brief at ease. It's a quarter till. Representative Gruenberg, and then we'll go to Guerra.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's label my last amendment, number 5.
Okay.
And as the members can see, this bill deals with two separate things. It is an attempt to modernize and update the contempt statutes, which is the means that the court uses to enforce its orders and to control the integrity of its process. Like there was a case where a person brought a shotgun into the courtroom, and that was a case of State v. Browder, and they said that the judge there could charge the person with criminal contempt, and they had a right to a trial and proof beyond a reasonable doubt in a jury trial, because you're not allowed to bring a shotgun into the courtroom.
Which amendment is this, Representative Gruenberg?
This is this last amendment by Gruenberg that says 09-50-020 is repealed and reenacted to read. So, anyway, these statutes on contempt, there are two, and the first one I've given as a handout, which states what the contempt is. That's 09-50-010. And the second is the punishment for contempt, which is Section 1 of the bill. And what we're doing here is simplifying what the punishments are. And right now it's fairly complex. It's normally it's $300 or 6 months in jail maximum for some of these things, and only up to $100 for other things. And some of these things that they're looking for under that are such things as misbehavior in office or disobedience to a judgment or rescuing a person in the custody of the officer, detaining witnesses, things that are fairly serious. And $100 wasn't much in 1964. 66 when this was written, but it's nothing today. And this basically allows the court to punish them for a Class A misdemeanor, which is up to a year in jail and up to $10,000 fine, particularly which is like for a corporation, because you can't put a corporation in jail. And there are some cases, there's a, some cases that are cited in the note where a corporation refused to answer a subpoena or do something. And
but it's in the discretion.
It's totally in the discretion of the court. And this just simply simplifies the whole thing and brings it up to date. Because if you refuse to answer a subpoena, refuse to serve as a juror, refuse to provide information that's required under a court order, you know, or answer witnesses, questions, the court should be able to do that. That doesn't mean that they'll necessarily do it. They might just fine you $100 or whatever. But they should have the authority to do that. And that's what this does.
Manali, did you want to make a comment on the record?
I don't. As Representative Grunberg indicated, we had a long discussion about this this afternoon, and you know, I'm satisfied that, as he indicates, the statutes have been in existence for a long time. The penalties are insignificant in most instances. I think what it means as a practical matter is that this contempt provision is almost never used. It's just not effective. And so this I think, you know, gives it some more authority, and so to that extent I think it's a good change.
I'm speaking from my private bar experience. I'm going to tell you a war story. I can't tell you the number of times people have not that kind of war. That people.
Can I see if there's an objection first? You might talk people out of your amendment.
I'll shut up.
Is there an objection to amendment number 5? Okay, hearing none. Amendment number 5 carries.
I was going to say, clients say, why can't you make the court, why won't the court do anything?
Do
this will allow the court to do something.
Good amendment. Okay, further amendments, Representative Grunberg?
No.
Okay, Representative Guerra. You're up. Thank
you, Madam Chair. I move, let's do the amendment that starts out, insert new 126120B and reletter accordingly. Actually, I take that back. Strike that. Let's do the other one, the one that starts out with a new subsection 4 that addresses the term near. That's the one we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, this will be amendment number 6. So is amendment number 1 withdrawn?
Yes.
Okay. Amendment number 1 has been withdrawn, so amendment number 6.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move amendment number 6.
Object.
Okay.
Just
wow.
Time.
That was an
amendment number 6 would provide a 30% tax rate on. No.
You're on the wrong note.
I believe that this addresses the concerns I discussed back and forth with Chief Monaghan. We'll leave the term near in the bill. But the things that near doesn't include is a distance that's so far away that the person couldn't have seen or heard evidence at the scene of the crime or of the flight of the crime. The flight of the crime is the thing Representative Cott mentioned. So to the extent near includes that area at the scene or if it's interpreted to mean the flight, all of that is okay. Unless the person couldn't have seen any evidence or heard any evidence of any of those things. If you're that far away, then that's not near. And then it says you're still subject to being interviewed under this bill if you were near at the time you saw everything, but let's say you fled 10 blocks away before the police were able to catch up to you. So that's the last sentence. And I use the term peace officer detains because that's the language that's in the bill right now.
Okay. Representative Coghill.
Probably, I don't know what I'll do with my objection. I'll listen to some of the testimony, but what I was looking at is sub 2 on page 2, line 18, where that a person has information of material aid in the investigation of the crime. So that leaves it fairly broad as it is, even under this scenario. So I think... you know, the scenario that Representative Cott brought up still would be fairly well handled under even this circumstance, I think. Right. So so I'll listen to the rest of the debate.
Mr. Cannelli?
Well, Madam Chair, this amendment certainly has a lot more words, but in my view, it's not really any different than the first formulation, which is to, you know, have it say within the viewing or listening distance of. I mean, I really view these as the same. So, I mean, I think I've probably had my say on.
And just to summarize, your concern is the cases that might involve domestic violence or abuse of a child or something that's inside of a home where someone could say, we didn't hear anything, we didn't see anything.
This formulation, I think probably takes care of that. Although flight from the crime, they're outside the home, and I don't know. Are they going to see the flight from the crime, or are they going to see something else that might be evidence but not flight from the crime? What I'm worried about is that these things happen in so many different types of situations that, you know, having the police go through this, you know, this calculation of, let's see, could they have seen, could they have heard? I mean, the police, as Chief Monaghan says, I mean, they're going to go and they're responding to a serious offense. They're going to quickly look around and say, who do I think has information about this? Who could have been in a position to have information? That's the person they're going to go to. Maybe get, you know, as he says, get their name or get a little bit of information and then, you know, go to the scene of the crime. I don't want officers to hesitate about, let's see, do I have the right to stop that person? What about that person? I mean, they ought to just, if somebody's near, they ought to just be able, and they think they may have information, they ought to be able to talk to that person. I just worry that we aren't going to be able to anticipate all of the situations that are going to confront the police, and that by being, you know, overly cautious and overly suspicious about the police, that we're going to hamper their ability to do their job. But, you know, beyond that, I mean, it's certainly as a lawyer, I guess I like more words than fewer, so it's better from that standpoint.
Representative Guerra, and then Senator Bundy's on the line.
Madam Chair, I understood the committee's concern that you can't define what near is. I mean, we'll leave that to the courts, I guess. But Mr. Quinelli's statement that we don't want the police to have to ask these extra questions of could they have seen it or could they have heard it, that's the question they're asking. I mean, what other question are they going to be asking? It's not like they have to stop and say, here are the things I was thinking about. And let me see if they could have heard it. That's exactly what they were thinking about. They're only going to interview people who might have seen something, who might have heard something. So this isn't an additional inquiry they're going to have to go through. It's what they already went through. And it takes 1 second. They're there. They're like, well, God, he might have seen something. She might have heard something. That's exactly what they're thinking at the time. What we're trying to say is, you also can't go a few blocks away where somebody couldn't have possibly heard it or seen it and start doing a neighborhood sweep. And so it would be problematic, I could understand, if I was trying to say, this is how you define near. But all I'm trying to say is near is whatever the courts determine what near is, just like Senator Bundy proposed. But it's not if you're so far away that you couldn't have seen anything or couldn't have heard anything. I mean, that's just where we're going to draw the line.
Senator Bundy, do you want to weigh in?
Well, I haven't heard the complete argument. I just got out of the doc's office. Sounds like we're over-lawyering a little bit, and I'd like to encourage the committee to come down on the side of stopping violence and gang problems rather than being too worried about for the criminals.
Okay. Representative Wilson? Anything? I thought you were going to say something. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Representative Coghill.
I think if you add the section sub 1 and 2 together under the reasonable suspicion that an officer may have, first it's going to be the commission of a crime means it's going to be connected to that action. I think we made that clear when we sent it out the bill out last time. This says commission. I think that means the action has to be somewhat related to the near. Certainly witnessed would be an information or material aid in the investigation also would require some knowledge of that area. And I agree with Mr. Guinelli. I think you want to give some latitude if it's a crime issue that you're trying to get to the bottom of. and you want to get people to give you information. And I agree that at this particular juncture, we're probably talking more about those who refuse than those who would be willing. I'm going to stick with the senator on this.
Okay, further discussion on amendment number 6? Anybody else? Okay, Madam Secretary, you want to call the roll on amendment number 6?
Representative Guerra.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
No.
Representative Wilson.
No.
Representative Cobb.
No.
Representative McGuire.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Grunberg.
No.
2 yes, 5 no.
Okay, and so amendment number 6 just barely fails to carry. Further amendments to, we're almost done, Bundy. Senate Bill 3005.
Madam Chair, I think this one was handed out, the one that, the witness protection one that starts at insert a new section 1261.120B.
Yep. That's amendment number 7. And Representative, Senator Bundy, just to catch you up, the only amendments really that have passed are ones that Max worked with Dean Guinelli and Michael on. So don't fret. Focus on your eyes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We'll chat with you later.
All right. Okay. So amendment number 7, this is 120, re-letter. Okay. Representative Guerra.
Did you tell Senator Bundy that... there's also a requirement that you actually don't have to wear a seatbelt.
Oh. No, I didn't tell him.
I'm sure he'll be okay with that.
Reasonable suspicion of wearing a seatbelt. All right, so is there, do you want to explain it?
I have a question. I can't read a word, if I may. On line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, may not be provided to a, is that a
defendant?
A defendant.
Should have been a doctor, Les. Representative Guerra, you want to make any statement on the
Yeah, record? Madam Chair, let's make this a conceptual amendment, though. I think it's worded correctly. Right now, what you want to do is make sure that a person doesn't provide, a witness isn't required to provide their identifying information, their address, things like that, to a gang member who could hurt them, right? I mean, you want to protect witnesses from retaliation. Right now, the law does that somewhat. It says you don't have to provide your name, your address to a defendant, except where the defendant doesn't have an attorney. Then you do have to provide your address to the defendant. And so I want to say if you're subject, if you've given your information out under because of this bill, and there's a risk and there's a threat to your safety by giving that information out, you don't have to provide your address or other identifying information to the defendant, even if the defendant isn't represented by counsel. But in the latter case, if the defendant is not represented by counsel, the courts are going to require that the defendant have some opportunity to interview you before trial. And so we're saying it should be in a place that does as much to protect the safety of the person and protect the defendant's right to, the constitutional right to interview. Probably some sort of neutral location. So the last sentence is, if the defendant is without counsel, the person may be made available for interview with the defendant at a place and in a manner that protects the defendant's constitutional right to obtain evidence and protects the person's safety. And then we'll, you and I talked about one other step we might take on this witness protection issue. But conceptually, I need to say, unless I do an amendment to the amendment, maybe that's safer. I want to make sure that these protections are in addition to the other protections we have for witnesses. So in AS 1261.120, there are other protections for witnesses. Maybe I should do an amendment to the amendment.
We'll go to our statutory construction.
Madam Chair, yes, I hope you do. I think it's a good idea. I definitely support that amendment to the amendment. This is really important.
Madam Chair, I'd like to do an amendment to this amendment.
Okay.
After the last sentence, insert the words, the witness protections in this section are in addition to the protections in AS 12.61.120.
Okay.
Ms. Chair?
Yes.
Can I interrupt for just one moment?
Yes, Ms. Rice.
For the record, my name is Lauren Rice. I'm staff to Senator Bundy, and I apologize for interrupting. I wonder if we should consider, currently, it's already defined in statute how victims of sexual assault, how their identity is protected. Would it be a good idea to just include material witnesses under the statute that's already in existence? Because there was an issue with the Anchorage Daily News. They printed some information about witnesses at the scene of one of these gang shootings, and it was not appreciated by the Anchorage Police Department.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you get the point. This is the issue. Representative Guerra, are you familiar with that statute? I guess I haven't even looked at the...
I'm not.
Okay. Dean Grinnelli, do you have any comment on that? I mean, you understand the point.
Representative Guerra's point?
And Ms. Rice.
I apologize. I was talking to Representative Guerra about something else in his amendment, and I didn't hear Ms. Rice's point.
Well, she was talking about the fact that the Anchorage Daily News printed the names of a couple of the witnesses to one of these incidents, and the police didn't appreciate it. And her thought was, "What is the site on that statute, Lauren?"
Madam Chair, I actually don't have it. We were going to work on this next year.
Okay.
But since it's coming up this year, I just thought I would suggest it. And what the ADN printed was the physical characteristics of the witness, the area that he lived in, and his car. And, for instance, for a victim of sexual assault, those kind of characteristics of the victim would not be allowed to be printed in the newspaper for protection purposes.
Okay. So she's saying that may be one method of getting at it. But just, I guess, to be clear, Lauren, do you have any objection to, at least at this point, putting amendment number 7 in conceptually?
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear what Mr. Guinelli says. I was actually on the phone with Khan when Representative Guerra was discussing this amendment. I was asking permission to offer the sexual assault victim.
Okay. Okay. So, Mr. Guinelli?
Well, let me just say on the last point about, newspapers publishing information about, victims and things like that, there's a specific statute that says that information about victims of particularly sexual offenses shall be withheld from public inspection. They're not public records, etc., and that there's nothing in the statutes to, but that would require that, the public be excluded from the court, but certainly, agencies can't be forced to disclose the names of victims. So I think we've already got something that protects victims to that extent. When you start talking about limiting what the newspapers can do, I think it's a broader topic and involving the First Amendment. So I'm not certain that at this late date right now that maybe we've got to tackle that. As to Representative Guerra's point, I think it's probably a good one. As he said, there are some protections under current law for the names, for the addresses and telephone numbers of victims and witnesses. The prosecution cannot, even though the prosecution is ordinarily required to turn everything over to the defense, for those categories of information, we can't be required to do that unless the court finds good cause for that. But in the case of of someone who represents himself, that presents different situations. Now, as a practical matter, what happens in DA's offices is they aren't going to give a defendant much of anything, and the defendants, involving victims and witnesses in terms of that, they would someone who's representing himself is probably going to have to go to a judge and force the prosecution to turn over that information. And then there is a specific statute that says that, you know, with certain types of crimes, if the judge finds that the victim may be in jeopardy, that information doesn't have to be provided. But I think his point is still, you know, valid. There will be situations where the prosecution might be required to turn over this information. So, so I think that that is, I think the first sentence in what in his amendment is, you know, is an appropriate one. The second sentence about the procedure, if the defendant was without counsel and the person may be made available for an interview, there's currently a court rule that talks about depositions in criminal cases, and there are requirements for holding depositions in criminal cases, and it's done under the judge has to, you know, oversee it. And I guess I'm kind of wondering if what we're talking about is making a person available for an interview, it probably ought to proceed under existing court rules involving depositions in criminal cases. And so, because as a practical matter, what's going to happen is if the person testifies in front of the grand jury, that testimony is going to be transcribed, it's going to be given to the defendant. If they give a statement to the police, that's going to be transcribed, it's going to be given to the defendant. The only thing they probably aren't going to have is their address and telephone number. If they really need that, they ought to ask the judge, you know, to order the witness to turn it over. They ought to get a deposition under the existing court rule. And so I don't think I've got any objection to the first sentence in there. I guess I just suggest that we let the court's existing rules apply for any further procedures.
Representative Guerra, is that a friendly amendment?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm in over my head on this one. So maybe the best we can do is that other issue that you and I talked about. If this bill is not going to move so fast, we can figure out some sort of witness protection mechanism. Probably the wording in this amendment doesn't work. So I think I'll move to withdraw the amendment. What number is this?
7.
I move to withdraw amendment number 7.
Okay.
But we still have this problem, which is the protection of witnesses to dangerous crimes who will now be endangered because we're making them give out their information. And I don't know the scope of that danger or how to address it if this...
Warren, one thing, Les and I were talking about whether or not it would be helpful to put a recommendation, a request for a report back regarding recommendations to the legislature for further material witness protections that could be put in place. And I guess the concern that we have, and it's I think it's being expressed by you and clearly others to the Anchorage Daily News, is that, you know, we all wish that people would be willing to be part of solving crimes and to be forthcoming and so on. We know that they're not. That's the purpose of the bill. It's to say, nope, we're gonna reach in there with the heavy hand of the government and get this information because there's a greater goal of solving the crime. That being said, you know, you can envision a situation where you witness something. Let's say, you know, you're a mother of a couple of kids and you live down the street, and you don't have any place else to live, and that person knows who you are, and now you have a choice of putting yourself and your children in very real jeopardy or not complying with the law. And so the concern is we're kind of doing one part of it. We recognize it's needed, but should there be a provision, I think there should be, for asking for some recommendations to the legislature next year to think about what we might do in terms of material witness protection. And so, Lauren, I guess I'm asking you what you've thought about and what you think would be reasonable.
Madam Chair, your concerns and the concerns of the committee are valid, and we were looking into creating an omnibus piece of legislation next year that would deal with some of those concerns, and that's why I brought up the issue of the protection that victims of sexual assault currently have. And I don't think I effectively explained what I wanted, but the situation that happened with ADN, that's something that we were going to look into because that's too much information printed in a newspaper. And if the committee wants a report, I don't know exactly what that would look like, but I think that it's worth looking into. We had a meeting with APD 2 weeks ago, and we were discussing about whether or not the witness protection programs in Alaska were sufficient, particularly for this bill, if we were going to be able to take care of witnesses once they gave information. Mm-hmm. And I know that's something that Senator Bundy is looking into and that he's aware of, and we've already been looking at solutions.
Okay.
I don't know if that answers your question, but if the committee wants to put in a request for a report or some kind of follow-up on witness protection programs, that would be at your discretion. I know there's a lot of federal protection. I don't know if you'd call it a program, but there's federal protection right now for witnesses.
Right. I'm sure. Fairly extensive. Representative Anderson and then Gruenberg.
Just a question. I agree with Representative Guerra in terms of the fear of this. My question would be then, in recognition of what Senator Bundy plans to do next year, but looking at the potential of your hypothetical with the mother and the kids, is this effective date? I didn't look. Is it fairly soon? Meaning, is there going to be a time period where that could happen until Bundy's next bill is passed?
Yeah.
Because it's an immediate effective date.
That is a matter of public policy.
Yeah. There's
a hope for the best. I don't.
There's an immediate effective date on it. Representative Gruenberg?
May I ask Mr. Guanelli a question, please?
Yeah.
Mr. Guanelli, what are the statutes currently on witness protections?
Senator Chair, Representative Gruenberg, in 1261, there are a number of statutes on generally thought of as victims' rights, but they also cover a number of protections for witnesses, and those are the ones I was referring to about, you know, disclosure, not disclosing the witness's address and telephone number, which is the same protection, by the way, that we give for victims' addresses and telephone numbers. So it's in there. 1261.120 specifically is the statute.
May I inquire? Does the state have a witness protection program?
The state doesn't have a formal witness protection program like the federal program, where we give somebody a new identity and relocate them to another area, that sort of thing. We don't have anything like that.
May I just continue?
Yes.
May I dialogue? Is it time for the state to think about developing such a program?
The chair, I don't know how successful a federal program has been. I know that it's controversial, and there's a feeling that it's been subject to, you know, a number of abuses, and that you know they're dealing more with truly organized crime, and sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. I think in Alaska, most of the time we haven't seen the kinds of crime, that organized crime, that we've seen in other states that would result in, you know, not only, you know, a witness, but their family and, you know, their extended family being put in jeopardy. I don't know that we've really seen that. We have seen a couple of situations. The Gustafson Sheely case a number of years ago, where the state prosecuted some basically highway shooters, and then later from prison, one of them arranged for the I think it was a letter bomb being delivered to the father of an eyewitness. Has happened, but I don't think we've seen the kinds of cases they've seen in the lower 48 in the federal level. So I guess the question is, I mean, it'd be more a question for, you know, Chief Monaghan, you know, Commissioner Tandesky, law enforcement officials, and whether that kind of thing is needed. I think what does happen is, in Alaska, is it's kind of the immediate situation. I mean, you're immediately in fear. If something's going to happen, it's going to be, you know, within 48 hours. I mean, I think people are legitimately scared about what could happen. But it's not this long-term type of, you know, there's going to be a contract out of me, you know, a year from now. It's more what's going to happen immediately. And I think that's what Representative Guerra's amendment goes to. And, I certainly support the first part of it. I just didn't want to interfere with the existing court rules and court procedures. That's all.
Well, and I think, and Representative Guerra's got an amendment here, I'd like to add my name to it if he would let me. But I think the answer is we don't know. I mean, and that's part of where this bill stems from, is that we're dealing with gang violence in a way that, frankly, we've never seen in Anchorage. It's been mounting. There have been flashes of it, you know, a decade ago, but we just don't know. We don't know where this is going to lead. We don't know how organized it's going to be. I don't think there's any way to predict how retaliatory some of these groups could be. I guess my bigger concern is not so much the Diamond Center scenario where multiple people could have been a witness and so on, but really the scenario that occurs in a neighborhood where there's a known gang house, there's a known place of activity, and neighbors live there and are going to continue to live there and are in the proximity, they're near the furtherance of the crime, and then they're being put in a position to give information. That's the concern I have. And so anyway, this conceptual amendment, which would be conceptual amendment number 8, at least is a statement of our intent to have some kind of report back that could give us a direction. And I know, Lauren, I'm sure you'll work on it, and I will too. And I'm sure Representative Guerra and Gruenberg as well. So I think you've got people willing to work on it that recognize
and
it.
And I'll co-sponsor that too.
And I will co-sponsor
this. Max is in my district, so it's really.
So can we all can all committee members be shown, unless Coghill doesn't
be moved? Then I'll not object.
Okay. Going to move it. Number 8.
Chair, I move amendment number 8.
Okay. And then I move and ask unanimous consent that all members of the Judiciary Committee be shown as co-sponsors. Is there
That's
objection?
A first.
Objection. Okay, hearing none.
Coghill, too.
And Coghill.
Yeah, even. JC.
All right.
This is kind of a shining moment for you. So amendment number 8, and obviously any objection? Okay, hearing none, amendment number 8 carries.
Was number 7... withdrawn?
Withdrawn.
Oh, it was withdrawn.
Madam Chair, are we ready to move the bill then?
Yes, we are.
Objection briefly.
Okay. Objection briefly to the movement of the bill.
I don't think anybody who isn't sitting here knows what number 7 was. That's just to require a report from the Department of Public Safety to help us deal with this issue of witness protection, which we need to deal with. I don't want to hold things up, so I'm going to let this thing move. Mr. Guinelli agreed to the first sentence of amendment number 7, which I withdrew. We couldn't figure out how to deal with the second sentence. I'm still going to try and craft something before it hits the floor. But I don't want to hold things up here.
Okay. So the motion.
Chair, I move that we move CS Senate Bill number 3005, Judiciary, amended in this committee with individual recommendations. And there are several zero fiscal notes at this point.
Okay. Objection? Hearing none. The bill is moved, and the committee is adjourned. Thank you very much, Lauren.